I want to reiterate something I said before, as I'm somewhat amazed at this, because when I did those series of talks years ago in 98, I guess it was the fall of 98, on the what I've come to call the five aspects of meditation, I was not thinking of any particular Buddhist teachings. I wasn't thinking of anything. I sat down and just these things came out of my mouth, and I really didn't know it was coming until I... And yet, as I look again at sections of Lotus Blossom about these columns, I'm amazed at the particular practical emphasis in each of the columns to, you know, what it is we need to do in this position in training is precisely what seems to me to be precisely what came up for me at the time. And as I said yesterday, and I'll say many more times, I really believe this teaching is that came from her master's great experiences in 76. A great flowering of merit, or just a gift to our Sangha. And they came through her, and they can come through any of us. Aspects of it can come through any of us. And it's all too great to come, for all of it to come through any one of us. I've told the story on myself before where I, one point when I was really desperate, I said to Rim Master, I said, I need to know the complete truth. It's kind of like, and Rim Master just smiled and said, no, Koshin, even the greatest Zen master never knows the complete truth. it's good to be sincere, and let's get real here. But, you know, very kindly. So, and even if we can't ever know the complete truth, we can be one with the truth. There's no part of us that is not of the eternal. And we can voice in some way or express in some way a much deeper truth than we know with our poor little brain. This can happen with any of us. We're talking today about the third of the five columns. It's called, Rim Master calls it, Heaven Penetrates Earth. If we remember that heaven is a symbol for the eternal, the infinite love and wisdom of the eternal. And earth is a symbol for our, for us, our karmic need, our longing, that which is seeking union with the eternal. What Rim Master so beautifully and so truthfully expresses in the words, recognize reunion with the eternal. So heaven penetrates earth is expressing something that is given in this process of the cleansing and conversion of karma. And the first point that I want to emphasize is this point about conversion itself. I've not emphasized that in this series of talks, but this is a point at which it's very important, as will hopefully be seen as I talk along. Remember that when Rim Master spoke of conversion, she's speaking of an actual spiritual transformation of greed into generosity, of fear into gratitude, of resentment and anger and hatred into compassion. compassion, of sympathy, of pride and opinionation, egotism, self-centeredness, into humility, and the understanding of the oneness of all of us within the eternal. There is the no self of existence. In my mind, the greatest secret of contemplative religion, it's only a secret because so few train themselves in a way that reveals the profundity of it. The greatest secret is this fact of transformation, so that from the point of view of the person who is thinking in terms of conversion or transformation, our suffering and its causes are the raw material of enlightenment. They are not that which separates us from God. We are not separate from God except in our own minds, our own ideas about things, our own opinions, our own delusions. There is no real separation. And all of that which seems like such an obstacle is really just the raw material of enlightenment. If we treat it in the right way, we do the right thing with it, the Eternal is just really keen to get at it and help it out. And then that raw material can do its transformation. And it's when this transformation is underway is when this third column gets activated. That's when the Dharma streams down upon the need. This is figuratively represented, this column, by the stream of Buddhas. But as our master says in one place in Lotus Blossom, and probably more in one place, but I found one. At the top of the third column is Shakyamuni, the Buddha. As the Dharma constantly descending, thus heaven penetrates earth. When in the Litany of the Great Compassion, when there are the words, do the work within my heart, the heart is calling out to the Eternal, please, you know, stream the truth down upon me so that I can be helped, so that my need can be helped. In the second column, we have the activity of what Ramaster sometimes called the cosmic washing machine, the water of the Spirit washing the need, getting it softened up and in the right position, you might say. And our activity at that point is the offering. We raise the heart to the Eternal. We hold upon the altar of the heart that lump of pain and confusion. Then the water of the Spirit can work upon it. The compassion of the Eternal can work upon it. Then when all conditions are ripened and the transformation is ready for the transformation to happen, then a flood of understanding can come that can remove the confusion that is at the heart of all suffering, the mistaken point of view. So what is our role in this? I'll read some words of Irvin Master. I'm going to abstract a little bit from the particular situation that provides the context for which this teaching was coming up for her, because there's many contexts. We all bring our own context to this. So I'm going to change the wording a little bit to abstract from that particular situation. She says, I cannot help this, I'll say, this need, this spiritual need, by joining in its delusion. Darkly clouded delusion, she puts it. I can help it by staying in meditation so that it may have the opportunity to see the light for itself. I must stay in this state at all times when dealing with worldly matters of whatever nature. Government officials, lawyers, people caught up in fame and gain, all must be met from the standpoint of meditation with the mind at peace and the heart open. Only thus can heaven penetrate earth and the harmony of body and mind be preserved. Without trying to gain a victory, knowing that there is no victory to be won or lost, I meet the so-called worldly as it is and know that it is all Buddha. Now for me in 1998, what came up to talk about at this point, and again, I wasn't thinking of this particular teaching of the column, was to emphasize patience. And if you look at what's being expressed here, I must stay in this state at all times when dealing with worldly matters of whatever nature. What is that, if you think about it? It's a kind of resolve imbued with patience. It can be the patience of just sitting still while the spiritual pain sits there on the altar of the heart and hurts. And what kind of came up for me was wait patiently. Be patient. Joan, at another point in Lotus Blossom, her master talks about being in that third column, and she's told not to try to rush up to meet what's coming, but to sit still there. So another word for waiting patiently is just sit still with an open heart. Sit still and allow the help to stream in. And so what we so often do is we, under the influence of the pain and confusion, we dart about and we behave impulsively, we grab at this and that. And whenever we do so, we break the rhythm of the training. As it says in the rules for meditation, even the slightest twitch will surely break the rhythm. We come out of meditation, we go into worldly mind, we go with our emotions, with our impulses, we go against the spirit of the precepts. We lose our spiritual grounding. When we lose our spiritual grounding, we take what is already pained and we complicate it. We make it even more pained and confused. And then people, if it continues, people out of desperation do desperate things which make their desperation greater, and the wheel rolls. To stop that rolling, we've got to sit still. We've got to be willing to wait, to allow all conditions to come together in the Eternal's time, not in ours. The Eternal, after all, knows better than us what it takes to accomplish this. The greater the need, the more this is true. The greater the bigger the karmic jangle is being worked on, put it that way, the greater our need to sit still and be patient with it. Keep the heart open to stay in meditation. To go through the day living in the world, but not being of the world. Here's another way you can look at it. Think of there being this kind of dark lump of pain and confusion in that column there, down at the bottom part of it. Think of there being, within that very lump of pain and confusion, the capacity, the potential for its own transformation given the right circumstances. You can think of like a little, you know, a little box or mechanical device that's all through some kind of spring tension is all kind of held closed up. And that very spring tension, although it's holding it closed up, it's like there's some kind of little mechanism that can turn it so it pops open. When it pops open, then the light can get down into it. But until it pops open, the light can't get into it. So we're sitting in meditation, figuratively speaking, sometimes literally, but most of the time figuratively speaking, since we don't sit in meditation most of the time, we're waiting for some of these little boxes to open and get the help that will resolve the jangle. Each of them can open when the timing's right and the conditions are right, and not until then. If we try to use our will to force it open, it won't work. It'll just create more jangle. Now, storming heaven does not work. If we abandon our will and just go slack and flaccid and don't make any effort in the direction of the precepts, in the direction of sitting still, but just go with our impulses, then the whole thing gets all clogged up. It's like you're pouring concrete around these little boxes then. There's no way they can open up then. Our job is through our meditation, through our training, to provide the conditions which allow the work of the eternal to happen. We are not the source of the help. We don't create our own enlightenment. There's no self to be enlightened, for that matter. There are needs to be met. There is confusion that needs to its resolution, its clarification. There is disharmony that needs harmony. There is pain that needs soothing. And ultimately, that need has to be met by the eternal. This is why this is religion, not psychology. It's not medicine. It's religion. If it were medicine, then what man can do would be enough. It's not medicine. What man can do is not enough. To understand that a little better, we need to think a little more detail about what these karmic jangles are made of and where they originated. They originated in moments of intense confusion in which someone usually very rapidly, it can happen in the twinkling of an eye, it can happen in an instant, drew the wrong conclusion about something and dropped that hammer of self-judgment on themselves. It happens in a moment of violence in which someone does something that then they die regretting profoundly. In the cases of lives in which there have been a very willful breakage of the precepts. It may happen initially, seemingly almost by accident, but then it's compounded again and again and again, until one has created within oneself a kind of runaway demon. What has to happen for the karmic jangles that derive from this process to get the help they need is that someone's got to be willing to sit with this need and the pain that's it's imbued with through a process that goes backwards, step by step, until the moment at which the essential decision was made, the original mistaken point of view is found, till that can be re-experienced. And at that point, when this happens again as a result of meditation training, that little box I talked about springs open, and what comes in is an insight given by the Eternal directly as to what the reality was, as opposed to what one thought it was. And amazingly enough, that's all it takes, and the whole house of cards dissolves. The whole house of suffering dissolves, at least in relationship to that particular jangle. It's truly an amazing thing. This is not something you can just figure out. And, you know, people try very hard to figure out the past. But you can never figure it out. You have to be taken back to the point where suffering was caused. And you have to be... And that point of confusion, which can again happen in the twinkling of an eye, has to be unconfused by the Eternal. Interestingly enough, these jangles, these blocks, they're kind of like a snarl of fishing line or something, that when you find just the right place to pull on it, like the whole thing goes and unravels all at once. And then there's nothing there. It was an unreality from the beginning. It was an unreality that left traces in feeling and in impulse, so that someone could one day start pulling on this string backwards, in a backwards direction, to go back to the source. And we don't begin meditating knowing that that's what we're doing, most of us. But that is what we're doing when we undertake meditation. And it's why this process, you know, scares people off at certain points. Because some of what one's going to encounter as one goes backwards is so painful and so difficult. When that need is met. And it goes poof, and there's nothing there. That nothing is, as Reverend Matthew said, the most magnificent, the greatest nothing you could ever imagine. There isn't great enlightenment and little enlightenment. There's just enlightenment. And every time that happens, what there is in that nothing is the immaculacy of nothingness. An infinite love, an infinite empty space that's full and bright. The reality of our existence is the eternal is. The reality is not the blocks. The purpose of the painful feeling is to guide us back to true reality, not to cause us to create more of the same. This is why it is so important how we live our daily lives. How we live our daily lives. Now, Buddhist training is living our daily lives in such a way that we can follow these threads back without even knowing we're doing so. 99.999% of the time, we can follow these threads back. And undergo the process of conversion or transformation. You follow the thread of fear through training with it, learning to meditate with it. And where you're led to is the upwelling of gratitude. You follow the train of anger, you follow the little chain of anger meditatively. Or training in self-restraint when you're angry, not giving way to anger, not indulging it. Not indulging angry thoughts. Not nurturing resentment. That's the best way to talk about anger. I'm an anger type, so I know that. Not nurturing resentment in your heart, in your mind. Not sulking mentally and spiritually. You train in anger. You train with the anger. And that anger leads you back to compassion. It does its miraculous transformation. To me, it's a miracle because I have no idea how it works. It happens. With pride, the hardest of them all, delusion, the transformation will be in the direction of humility and in the certainty of the eternal, our true self, so that one doesn't have to cling so desperately to that little self. Such an illusion. In one way or another, we're always talking about what are really just called the basic teachings of Buddhism. That's really all there is to Buddhist teaching, is those basic teachings revealed in myriad aspects. they're simple teachings and they go infinitely deeply. Anyone can read the Four Noble Truths and have an intellectual understanding of the Four Noble Truths and nothing flat. Oh yeah, suffering exists. Oh, I see that. Yeah. And you can make sense of the cause of suffering. You can make sense about some kind of sense of nirvana. Just imagine that suffering wasn't there. That, you know, eightfold path is fairly, most of it makes some sense to people. But in actual fact, it's all a closed book until we're doing it, until we're walking the path. And we keep coming back to the same teachings again and again and again, to relearning how to do the same things that we thought we knew, but it turns out we, in this aspect of our life, we didn't really know it so well. And why this is so, as I see it, is because some jangles get helped, and that enables other ones to work their way to the surface then to get their help. And those jangles are just as confused and ignorant as the first and second, the third and the tenth and the hundredth lot were. There is no self that is enlightened. There are these little bits of nothingness that are confused. And each of them needs its illumination. To live by Zen is to live an ordinary daily life in the context of meditation, in the context of the precepts. To train in the monastery is to live an ordinary daily life. We don't have to do anything flashy. We don't have to accomplish anything that the world will recognize or think of as a great accomplishment. It's not very likely we would, frankly. But this is a 24-hour a day exercise room, this monastery, in which we work on self. When all conditions are ripe, when everything is in the right position, then every need will be met. This is something in 98-99 I saw clearly. Every need will be met. If we want to live in the world as if in the sky, it's very important that we keep our focus on our own training, not worry about the state of other people, not worry about the world. Do our own training. Each of us is our own little package of need. That's our responsibility. My responsibility is my need. Getting it to the eternal. Your responsibility is your need. Getting it to the eternal. I can't do your part for you. You can't do my part for me. Doesn't mean we can never help one another. I wouldn't be doing this talk if we couldn't help one another. And the human help can only go part way. The rest of the way, the eternal has to carry us.